right, welcome to the Valor Podcast. We're here, back to school. This episode of the Valor Podcast, we're at the New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell, New Mexico. First, I want to thank Booyah Media for being a show sponsor. They helped us with the website and online support. You can see their work at booyahmedia.com. So this week and in the coming weeks, there's millions of people and parents and guardians and even kids that are either dreading or excited about the prospect of going back to school. A lot of the things I see on social media, people are posting pictures of their kids with their backpacks and their school, and mom's happy, dad's happy, and the kids are kind of dreading it. The school we're at right now, the New Mexico Military Institute, is a little different. Its mission is to educate tomorrow's leaders in academics and leadership, preparation, and character development. The school is known as the West Point of the West. NMMI has 1,000 students from 43 states and 13 foreign nations attending. Many of our nation's heroes have gone to school here. Our guest is retired Major General Jerry Grizzle. He is the superintendent. He is retired from the United States Army and has a professional career in the executive level in business. Thanks for joining us, Major General.
Well, thank you for having me.
So back to school. That's a big excitement thing. Is it the same at a military academy?
Well, I think more so here, and ours is, as you pointed out, a little different because we bring in our new students quite a bit early. They've been here for about 6 weeks now, and they go through the first portion of their time here in the military acclimation, and then they start school, and then they have to combine that military training that they get with their actual going to classes. So they've been here since the first week in August. So as I said, been here about 6 weeks now.
And how did you get involved in, I mean, your accolades are quite impressive, not to, you know, have you toot your own horn, but, you know, you had a very successful military career and you had a very successful business career. What made you go to education?
Well, through both of those, I had the opportunity to teach. The military allows you to teach your soldiers. In the business world, I had the great opportunity to be asked to come into business schools and teach about what I had done in the business world. I just found that very rewarding. So I completed my doctorate degree in business and thought I would actually go into a business school somewhere when I retired from the military and teach business. But instead, this opportunity came along to actually be in education, more in the administration side. Although I do go into our business school, I'm kind of the go-to substitute teacher for any of our business classes. And so when this opportunity came along, I just found it very rewarding to combine so many of the backgrounds that I've had the opportunity to be a part of in my life, both my military, my civilian business career, and now academia.
You know, the joke, you know, with parents, you know, well, Johnny's misbehaving, we're just going to send him to military school. How accurate or how far from the truth is that? Because I know there's a lot of high quality things happening here, and it's probably no slouch to get here and graduate.
Well, the story is accurate. The reality is not. I hear that all the time, and we actually kind of fight that stigma. We're not a reform school. We don't have an agreement with the courts that they'll send bad kids here instead of going to jail or going to the military. What we do provide is a very structured environment so that kids can come here and learn to apply structure. A lot of people use the word discipline. I really like the word structure. Structure will bring discipline, but in a different way. It's a personal discipline. It's an ability to learn to manage your time. It's an ability to learn to manage your organizational skills to accomplish things. So it's more than just discipline, thinking of that from a term like you would think if you were in a correctional system. It's discipline that comes about through being in a structured environment, and then you apply that to your education. And so I think we were very good at accomplishing that and teaching young men and women how to organize time, how to organize their personal affairs to accomplish tasks that they never were able to prior to coming to an environment like NMMI.
I like that structure. How does that parallel? I mean, you've trained soldiers, you've gone to them with war and things like that. How does that parallel building structure with students? I mean, I know they're vastly different kind of outcomes and situations, but, you know, in the thick of it, it's the same decision-making process.
Well, it is, and particularly the age differential we have here. We start with the ninth grade. Some of our students, 13 years old. Now, they come out of an environment where a lot, in some cases, has not been expected of them. And what we teach them is to be held accountable for their own actions. And so coming into an environment here where a mom or a dad or a family member is not doing things for them, they're expected to do the things for themselves. And when they find out that they don't do them or they do them incorrectly, then they're put into a situation where they're held accountable for their own actions. And it takes them a while to understand, if I don't do it, there are consequences. And the consequences means taking something away from them. And the greatest thing we can take away from our students is free time. That's very valuable here because they have so little of it. So when they don't do something they're supposed to do, meaning they don't get up on time, they don't go to class, they don't turn in their homework, one of the greatest things we can take away is what little free time they have. And it comes in the form of a demerit. You get so many demerits, then you have to walk a tour, it's called. A one-hour tour on a weekend means that you're in your full uniform with your rifle over your shoulder, and you walk military spots in a file for 1 hour. And you walk off those demerits, and you got the demerits for doing something or not doing something you should have done.
That sounds rough for a teenager that has little time and that wants to play Xbox or, you know, Pokemon Go or whatever.
Well, it is, and we have those things. I mean, we provide those fun things to do here as well. We have a fantastic facility here. We have a 10-lane bowling alley. We have a complete, what any other school would call a student union. And we have big screen TVs and Xboxes for them to play with and pool tables and foosball tables. When you do the right thing, you earn the right to go to those facilities and have fun on the weekends and on free time. But when you don't, when you choose to not do the things you're supposed to do, the biggest thing I can do is take away free time. So hopefully if you do that once or twice, you realize this isn't a very good thing to do. I probably should pay attention and simply do what I'm asked to do, and I won't be walking a tour on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon.
And that's similar to the military. I know there's a different kind of punishments and things like that. How did that work in the military life?
Well, I went to Federal OCS at Fort Benning. I'm not a West Point graduate or an ROTC graduate. I started out as an enlisted man, had the opportunity to go to Federal OCS at Fort Benning, Georgia. I tell you, it was exactly the same. Same system. If we screwed up, if we did something wrong as an OCS candidate, we were given demerits. So many demerits, you earned tours. And you walked around Fort Benning, Georgia on a Saturday, and everyone knew those OCS candidates, and you'd see people pointing at you because they knew you messed up. It was very visible. And our candidates, our cadets, are not visible to the public. They're inside the barracks area here. But the other cadets see them, and they know that the only reason they're there is because they didn't do something they should have done. And so it's a very similar form of discipline at this level. And in the military, it goes on really the same thing. You can be restricted to the barracks. Even if you're a soldier assigned to a unit, your discipline can be in the form of taking things away that you normally take for granted. And that's a very powerful form of discipline.
How does a parent and student prepare to come here? I know it's a dormitory school, so you know you don't see your kid Monday through Friday. I mean, I know there's probably exceptions for people that live in Roswell, but I mean we covered about all the states and countries that people send their kids here.
Well, you're right. We're a mandatory boarding school, and it's really not any different for this. Parents that live here in Roswell, they really don't see their students unless the student earns a right for a weekend pass. So they're here 24/7 right here at school. We advertise social media. We're on all the social media sites. We advertise traditionally through magazines and newspapers. But our number one most powerful form of attracting students to come to NMMI is word of mouth. Families, friends, former graduates tell their friends about it. It's still when we talk to our students, how did you find out about NMMI when you started inquiring or applied? And someone told them, word of mouth, still the most powerful form of our attracting students here.
It seems like definitely word of mouth is, and any kind of business, whether it's a positive or negative thing, people take that story and they make it their own. And whether it's with a school here and get involved, or even in the veteran community, they're like, you know what, I'm going to enlist. My dad was, you know, World War II veteran, Vietnam. You know, I just feel that calling. What can people expect to get? What's the end product when they graduate?
Well, I think it goes back to some things we just talked about. If you look at the mission statement, and you read some of it, we develop leaders of character. We develop leaders that think critically and make sound decisions. A third dimension here at NMMI, you might suspect in a military-type environment, we believe people should be physically fit. So physical fitness is a mandatory requirement here. But back to the leadership and character and development of critical thinking and sound analysis, we want students to leave here and be able to carry that with them when they go. Whether they leave us and go finish a degree at a four-year school, whether they leave our high school program and go on to a four-year school at that point, whether they finish and go into the military, go to a service academy, whatever they do, we believe that when they go to that next level, when they leave here, they'll take those things with them. They'll take that honor and integrity that comes from following the things they learned here, and it'll go with them the rest of their life. And that's one of the things I enjoy, is talking to our alumni that have 10, 15 years since they've left here, and they still talk about those very principles they learned here. What's even more rewarding is listening to their spouse, now male or female spouse, who talk about watching their spouse adhere to those same principles, knowing and watching them make hard decisions that they use those principles. They think critically and they use sound analysis before they make a decision that might get them in trouble. And they not normally would have done that had they not been to NMMI. And then the funny things they hear of their spouse lining up all their shirts in order, just like they have to do here, and their shoes in order, and always shining their shoes. Those are the fun things you hear. But you pick those things up here, and you remember them all your life.
And I've heard the same thing with veteran service. I mean, there's I have a lot of veteran friends, and they do the same kind of nuanced things, the quirks, that, if you will, and people look at it, the average citizen's like, why are they? And I, you know, you get to talk to them, you understand it, and you're like, okay, it makes total sense. And so, what are some of the things that you think are important in terms of education here in the 21st century? I know we have a lot of thought. You know, there's a different kinds of schools that exist. You know, when I went to high school, we had PE, we had art, we had other things. And slowly it's more class time, more preparation, and that physical fitness kind of thing is going away. The arts are going away. How do you think we should go about educating our next leaders?
Well, we provide we do refer to it as a liberal arts education here, well-rounded. We do take advantage of the fact that we have them here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have mandatory study hall in the evening from 7 to 9:30. Our teachers are at their desk every morning at 7 for 45 minutes of access by the students. Every fourth Saturday, our teachers are at their desk from 8 to noon to make themselves available. So there are a lot of advantages we have, and we certainly take advantage of it. Our students are exposed to arts and culture and things that they wouldn't be exposed to in a traditional school. We teach etiquette. I have an etiquette officer. Every student is taught etiquette. Every student goes through a full black tie formal dinner where they have to know how to use all the knives and forks and spoons. So those are the value-added things we provide by having the type of environment. Our education in the classroom, the one word I've used since I've been here with my faculty is to be relevant. Relevant in every aspect of what's in the educational process at NMMI. What they teach and how they teach it. We have students come in here that have been using iPads since the first grade. So we can't stand in front of them and lecture for 60 minutes. They want visual, they want graphics, they want things to hold their attention. And we've got to do that or they won't even come here. So I think the word relevant is the only word I continue to use to do that. And so far, I think we're achieving that. When we look at our high school division, our ACT scores are 2.5 points above the national average. They're 4 points above the New Mexico's average. So I know our high school division is doing well. The CAP score that we have to take with our junior college division, again, in the critical learning skills, we're above the national average. STEM is what dominates right now, certainly science, technology, engineering, and math, and we're very heavy in that because of our relationship with the service academies. And so we're very, very heavy in those services and those subjects, but just as equally are we heavy, we teach art, we teach math, we teach drama, we teach all the foreign languages. So we teach a very well-rounded liberal arts education here.
You were talking about that, and you know, everybody's getting a certain thing, trying to spark that interest and everything. How is that similar to your time in the military and then also in business? You know, there's sales guys that, you know, they have adapted. They've gotten to new technology. Obviously, military has adapted. I mean, we've went from trench warfare to urban warfare. Talk about how staying relevant education, military and business, how you have to constantly evolve with the times.
Well, you're right. Evolution and evolving, staying competent. Tuesday night of this week was a guest speaker at a brigade level function, and they wanted me to talk about career development in the military from my time period. And what could I advise young officers? And you hit the word right on it. And competency was what I told them. Be professional, be proficient in whatever your area of expertise is. You never know when the opportunity is going to present itself that you're going to be asked to stand up and do something. Lead the staff through the deliberate planning process. Well, do you know what that is? Be proficient in what your area of expertise is so that when you're given the opportunity, you're able to do that. That's in the military or in the business world. We do sometimes get channeled into very refined, very narrow areas, and those are good. We need those. But at the same time, the business world sometimes looks for generalists, and they're looking for somebody that can not only be very good in an area, but they want somebody that they can take outside that area of comfort and have the ability to reach out and to do other things. And so that's why I think a broader liberal-based education helps people be able to do that. The story is about the guy that they were looking for somebody to manage the company picnic, and they looked on this guy's resume, and he'd had done something like that, totally outside of his area of technical expertise, but had been down there that he had put together this big event. And so they pull him out, and he became really known in the company then for being able to do things outside of his area. And I think that's what a place like NMMI represents through the Corps of Cadets, because these students, not only are they doing the educational piece, they're a 15-year-old high school sophomores in charge of 10 students. Get them up, get them dressed, get them to class, be completely in charge of them. Regimental commander, a sophomore in college, is in charge of 900 students. You add that to a resume, in addition to a rarely refined business degree or a STEM-related degree, and you've got an incredible employee, military or business or whatever vocation they're in. So it's extremely powerful what we can do for a young man or young woman.
Can you train a leader, or do you think they're born?
I think both. I think they're truly leaders that are born. There's no question about that. But I think we have the ability to train leaders, that we can show them the principles and the techniques, and they can develop those skills. I really do. I think people have that ability if they have the desire, and we can show them how to do it. I do believe that.
And touching on the three career fields you've been in, what is one thing in business that you saw was like, wow, that guy really thought out, or that girl thought outside the box?
Well, I think I would have to use my time at Sonic Drive-Ins, because when we got the group that I went with at Sonic Drive-Ins in 1984, there was really a philosophy that the old drive-in concept was an albatross. It kind of had its evolution coming out of the 50s, the 60s, the car hops, but it was really dying off. And, you know, it took a new entire philosophy about the concept, and getting back to service was the whole marketable point of difference. And that's what we took to the concept. We cleaned it up. We gave it a new look, and we focused everything on service. And we could give better service than our competitors, than a McDonald's or a Wendy's. We gave better, consistent service, and we took the focus away from whether you were sitting in your car or you're standing at the counter, and made that the marketable point of difference. And so it quit being the focus of this old, tired 50s drive-in concept, and it was that we had the best service in the fast food business.
So, Major General, were you the guy that added the mint inside the bag?
That was there from the very beginning. Troy Smith, the founder of the company, put that in there, and it just stayed.
All right. Well, I was trying to find the genesis for the guy to think. So,
I wish I could take credit for that, but I can't.
What about military life? I mean, you've trained soldiers up. You've sent them to war. You've told them what to do in war. You've told them what to do in peacetime. What is one thing that you've took away from that experience that you saw a certain individual or even a group was, wow, that's a leader?
Well, again, I think the most important thing is to always look out for your soldiers. Always have their best interests at heart. To know that you as a leader have trained them to the greatest extent you possibly can. You've taken care of them from clothing, from their weapons, and that you can, with a clear conscience, either send them off or go with them on whatever mission they've been assigned. I think that's the greatest thing that a leader can do, is know with a clear conscience that you've sent them off as well prepared as you possibly can. And hopefully you're going with them as a leader. That's some of the couple of times I've sent soldiers off, and it's because of my rank differential at that point. I could not go with them. I got to go to see them, but for instance, I sent two rifle companies to Bosnia as part of another task force that was going over there. I was a one-star general. I couldn't go I wanted to go as a captain, company commander so bad, but I couldn't. I did get to go visit them later, but it was the only thing I could do with a clear conscience is know that we had trained them to the greatest extent we could possibly train them. There was not a single piece of equipment they were lacking to do their job. And all I could do was send them off with that knowledge, that they were as trained as they could possibly be, and they had every piece of equipment they needed to do their job.
How about in the academia world? I mean, you've been here for a while. I'm sure you've gotten some stories and seen some really incredible teachers or even cadets that have put them above self.
I think what I try to do is, particularly with my background, is make sure that the material you present is real. And I've had the great ability, because of the background I've had, to try to mix stories that bring real stories into the textbook or the classroom. And in the business world, having had those opportunities, I can tell them stories from business that match directly to the subject matter in the textbook. And I challenge our faculty members to do the same thing. It's one thing to just get up there and lecture or to pull material out of a book and try to relay it to the students. It's another thing to make the material real and to make it come alive. And that's what I challenge them to do. And when I'm in the classroom taking a class for a teacher or coming in to bring an entire subject at the teacher's request, I just try to make it come alive for them so that they really see it and feel it and understand how the principles they're trying to learn in the book are actually applied, so that they see this is really something I should learn because I might have the ability to do it someday.
Very good. I was walking the campus. I mean, it's a sight to see if you're ever on a military academy type atmosphere. The cadets are in their BDUs or whatever the choice of camouflage uniform is, but there was a code displayed. It says a cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal, nor tolerate those who do. A cadet's honor is the bond among and between current cadets and the thousands of alumni who have come before. That's a very powerful stop you in the tracks. I mean, it's black and white. There's no gray area. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the greatest thing about that is the cadets themselves police that honor code. There's an honor board. And it's an honor board of cadets. And if there's ever a violation or a suspected violation, it's brought before that board of your peers. And so I think the three things, just as you said, just will not be tolerated, whether it's cheating on a test, whether it's lying, to your fellow cadets. None of those things are tolerated, and if they're suspected or reported against a fellow cadet, then that cadet goes before a board of their peers and has to answer for that violation. And I think that goes right back into our mission statement, where we're teaching cadets of character. So if you're a cadet of character, then you should not lie, steal, or cheat. Then we've done our job. And another thing we talk about with cadets all the time is, are you willing to make the right decision when no one's around, when it's just you? Have we taught you those three things? I will not lie, I will not cheat, and I will not steal. So therefore, I have character. I'm willing to make that critical decision and sound analysis and make the right decision. It all ties together here at a school like NMMI.
Exactly, like when nobody's there and you're there with the test, it says answer sheet right there. I mean, how will that cadet respond? And it sounds like, 99.999% will say, nope, I'm going to do it the honorable way. So the school has been around for 125 years. You guys are celebrating that 125th. It looks good on you guys. And over the centuries and over the years and the decades, people have kind of manipulated what lie, cheat, steal means. How do you keep true to the basic genesis of that, those words? I mean, all the way back to, when Adam and Eve were there.
Well, I think the first thing is just like I told you, the students police it themselves. The cadets police it themselves. They take great pride in it. They live every day by it. And if there's suspected violation, they report it to a board of their peers. So I think that's the very first thing that happens. Used to, and it's really not allowed anymore. Sometimes I wish it was, because of the visual impact it would make. But you used to get drummed out of the Corps if you were found guilty of an honor violation. And what that means is the entire Corps would fall out in formation, and the student that was found to have an honor violation would be drummed out of the Corps at about 2:30 or 3 in the morning. And all you would hear in the middle of the night was the drum, single drum, emulating the steps of the cadet as they had to walk in front of the entire Corps and leave. Very powerful, emotional thing. You can imagine probably the legal problems that would cause today, but from an emotional perspective, probably only one time is all that would happen, and no other cadet would ever want to have to do that. But I think the biggest, powerful, most important fact is the simple fact that cadets police it themselves. It is their honor code. They live by it. And if there's a violation, they have to answer to a board of their peers. And that's a powerful thing.
With that, you have a strong alumni base. I mean, I was looking on the website. There's, if you want to get involved or want to still be alumni, still have that pride of being a Bronco, you can do that. How can people take a page from the veteran community, the different units and the traditions in a military academy, and apply it to civilian and business life? I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, it's my 9-to-5 job, whatever. But it really isn't. It's like you're working with that person. You're going for a common goal. How can civilians and even business professionals find the kind of the thread that is similar to the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the alumni type?
Well, in some businesses, it's difficult. And it's unfortunate. You hit the nail on the head. Some people just view it as a paycheck, and they shouldn't do that. They should have some, hopefully they have loyalty to who their employer is. In a military school, a military environment, we have someone that actually is responsible for that. So they're constantly have the pulse on the alumni, and what can we do to continue to keep them close to us and pull them in and work with us. We have over 30 chapters around the nation, and we go out to them. We just were in Albuquerque last Saturday at a very big gathering of 70-75 of our alums in the Albuquerque chapter. So we make it a very big part of our day to stay in touch with those alums and keep them up to date about what went on here. And if you think about it, kind of goes back to some of the discussions we've had. If you're 13 or 14 years old and you come here in the 9th grade and you're here 10 months out of the year for those very formidable years of your life, this place has such an indelible impression upon you that you you just want to stay in touch. It's so much a part of who you are and what you are. And so we have an entire department that does nothing but make themselves available and stay in touch with our alums.
And I was looking at the alumni list. I mean, the cool thing is there's a lot of business executives that, you know, they came here and, you know, maybe military wasn't their path. Some went into the service and served honorably. They've gained the rank of all the way up to general and even down to private. And there's been a couple, I think one Medal of Honor recipient and probably a host of other awards that were earned on behalf of defending our nation. There's also Roger Staubach. We're kind of in that beltway of cowboy, you know, Dallas Cowboy pride. So, you know, having that list of alumni, does that as a business guy, because obviously you were in sales, does that help close the deal?
Oh, absolutely. And we hold them up in high regard and talk about them a lot. Roger Staubach was just put into the NJCAA Football Hall of Fame last week. And the NJCAA asked each of the schools for all of those people that were put in to take the responsibility to notify their alum and to present the award. So I talked to Roger Staubach last week, and he's such a humble man, and he just kept saying, I don't understand. I was only there 1 year. Yes, Roger, you were here 1 year, but you were in NJCAA All-American in two sports and all-district in a third. I mean, you had such an incredible impression upon NMMI and the NJCAA.
And then went to the Navy Academy.
And then went to Naval Academy, won the Heisman Trophy. And he does stay in touch. If you go in our main gymnasium, there's a tribute as you walk in the door to him. And other guys, Owen Wilson.
I was about to say.
Sam Donaldson, Chuck Roberts, Conrad Hilton, the Hilton Hotel chain founder, is an alum here. You can just go on and on at the incredible people that have been through the portals of this school.
That has to be pretty cool because, I mean, there's some people that like you say, are successful and, you know, they're thrusted into the spotlight. But there's other, I wouldn't call them average Joes, but there's just the people that went about their business and contributed to society in a positive way.
More than we know. And that's been, again, back to the alumni thing, that's part of our alumni director's responsibility is to reach out to all those people and make sure we know who they are and what they've done. And not that we there's some great thing that we're looking for. We just want to stay in touch with them. And what have you done since you left the school? Make sure we know how to reach out and touch you. Make sure you're getting our publications and staying in touch with you. And you're right, there's no telling what some of our alums have accomplished out there that maybe we've lost touch with them and we don't know what great things they've accomplished.
Finally, the thing that I want people to leave with is what, as a country, can we do to help train our leaders?
Well, I think we have to accept the fact that there are great young kids out there, and giving them opportunities like New Mexico Military Institute is something that it should be made available to more children. It's, you know, we're a paid school. We're not a public school in that sense, so it costs money here. And so making opportunities like NMMI, we belong to an association of military colleges and schools in the United States. So there's other schools like us, but they cost money. And for states to maybe look at it in a little broader perspective, and like New Mexico Military Institute, fortunately, is a land-grant school. So we do get assistance from the state. We still charge tuition and fees to make up the difference.
Yeah, you got to keep the lights on.
But we are a state-supported school, and so that makes the cost to come here a lot more affordable than some others. So I think if people would look at our concept and see what we do and like what we do, maybe they would expand that in other states. I would tell you that California has started some charter schools through the public school system that are completely based on a military format, just like we are. So I think there's a movement towards that. Chicago now has 6 public schools that are based on a military format within their public school system. So I think there's been a movement towards realizing that there is a place for a structured environment to teach education, and it seems to be catching on.
Well, Major General Grizzle, I appreciate the time. We covered a lot of things. We touched business, education, military life, you know, alumni, how to be honorable with the lie, don't steal, don't cheat, And so I want to thank you for joining us and being here for the Valor Podcast at the New Mexico Military Institute. Thanks for listening to the Valor Podcast. Make sure to like us on Facebook. You can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or any podcast management app. Visit us on our webpage at thevalorpodcast.com. Finally, find your mission. There are many veteran organizations, nonprofits, and veterans needing your help. I promise you, you invest some time into those people, you'll make a friend for life. Thanks again, and have a great day.